Welcome into All Ball. I'm Doug Gottlieb. Thanks so much for downloading this pod. Jonathan Givony is going to join us. His website, draftexpress.com, has been one of the many resources that I've used for during my 16 years in the biz. And he's really good. You know, I love ball guys. I love guys that take the initiative of trying their own thing, of just liking basketball, watching basketball games. We'll actually have to have him back on, and he has his 10 worst places he's ever been. That would be amazing to me. He's going to join us a little bit later on. Let me quickly give you a couple of thoughts. By the way, you can listen to my radio show every day, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio or the iHeartRadio app. We're also on Sirius XM. We're on the same channel as Dan Patrick. I think it's like 203 on one and 217 on another. Don't hold me to that. I think I got him close enough. Anyway, we got the NBA draft upcoming. I'll give you a couple of thoughts on that momentarily. But the NBA is fascinating. Since we last talked, right? Since we last talked, like it was last Thursday heading into Friday. You know, think about how much things have changed. We now have an NBA champion. They're in Toronto. Kevin Durant has officially, he's not only torn his Achilles tendon, he's had it repaired since then. Klay Thompson's torn his ACL. And Anthony Davis is now a Laker. So let's go through all of these things. Maybe it's because I told people that KD was the best player in the NBA before everybody else realized he was the best player in the NBA. But I think KD will be closer to back more so than most people who tear his Achilles tendon. And here's the logical reason why. He's explosive, but he's not a freak. And so I don't know if getting back that level of athleticism is going to be that hard, right? Like when KD beats you, yes, for a seven-footer, he's got a great first step off the dribble, but it's not like he's got the craziest first step off the dribble. You know what I mean? So, his gift is that he can do everything and can just jump up and shoot over you, and he's not going to shrink, right? Additionally, you know, look at some of the guys who have struggled coming off of a torn Achilles tendon. Some of them are positions of supreme athleticism. He's not. Others are guys that are bigger. DeMarcus Cousins. And DeMarcus Cousins is heavy. And that's never been the issue with Kevin Durant. Additionally, KD is a freak in terms of his work ethic. Like, guys just don't work as hard as Kevin Durant works. And so you factor all those things in, I think it'll be okay. The big question is, obviously, New York or Golden State. Personally, I'd love to see him stay with Golden State, right? Let's let most of a year go by. Maybe they sneak into the playoffs and he plays in the playoffs next year. Or maybe he sits an entire year and then they get the band back together, much like Jordan when he missed a season and came in midseason the following year. Like, wouldn't that be amazing? If he goes to New York, I think you go to New York, he's going to sit for an entire season. Think about that if you're a New York Knicks fan. You have not had Porzingis for an entire year, then he was traded. Then you wouldn't have Kevin Durant for an entire year. Like, that's a hard sale to season ticket holders. Hey, come pay ridiculous prices to see the other team play. And, oh yeah, by the way, it saves you a seat for when we're actually good, maybe a year from now, if Kevin Durant comes back. But, I mean, I'm devastated by it. He's a great player. He would have changed the series. He did change the series for a short period of time. And then he tears his Achilles tendon. I also will tell you this. I think it was partially torn before he got back in there. They just couldn't see it. They're hard to see. But the only way to fix them is when they're torn. And I kind of think he had to know something was up. And I think some of the doctors suspected something was up. I just don't know whether the doctors told Kevin Durant something might be up and this is a possibility. But now we wait and we see. They'll offer him the Supermax to stay in Golden State. Maybe some of that's out of guilt. Some of that's out of the idea of this is the best way to keep him together. And then you have Klay, and that just sucks because he's a stud. I mean, he's a you know, I mean, but this is, you know, you play that many games. One thing, you talk to doctors and they'll tell you, like, you don't hurt yourself because of the attrition of playing 500 games in 5 years. You hurt yourself because of an awkward fall, and some of it because of the genetics and how your leg and knee is, and an awkward fall end up doing it to them. But the more games you play, the more chances you have of an awkward fall. And so to that, sure, the number of games played might be one of the reasons that he hurt himself. And then you have the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors have needed an excuse to revamp their bench, to change up, to find Warriors 2.0. And this is the chance. I don't think you trade Draymond Green. But look, Draymond, until he got in shape for the playoffs, was the shell of his former self. So you got to worry about his conditioning. And as much as you say you can't replace Draymond, like, look, the first time the Bulls had won three in a row, they had Horace Grant. The second time, they had Dennis Rodman. There will be another guy. I'd prefer it to be Draymond because he has such a high basketball IQ and everybody knows him and he knows them. But I wouldn't prefer it to be at a max contract level. So I think there's some long, hard conversations. But Iguodala, by the time they're good, Iguodala's probably going to be retired. I would say Sean Livingston probably retires. Andrew Bogut's probably done for a second time around. Like, they're going to look very different next year, and in 2 years, they should look completely different outside of the big two or maybe the big three or big four. I don't know. Then you have the Anthony Davis trade. Did the Lakers give up too much? Yeah, I think they actually did. I did. I understand that he's priceless. I understand it's two superstars. They're fired up to get back to work, and they may be able to get it, you know, get Kyle Korver and J.R. Smith and figure out the point guard situation and, you know, get a JaVale McGee to come back at a limited salary and throw together pieces, and LeBron has one last run in him. I don't know, though. Maybe I'm a sucker for the idea of building from within, but I don't think they were that far away. I don't. I did think they had a bunch of cap room that they could have used and gotten a superstar, and, you know, or they could have traded a lot less for a Brad Beal, maybe. I don't know. But, you know, like, we can't go back and fight those wars when the war has already been decided. And so now that you're the Lakers, you're going to have to find a way to get guys on the cheap. This is where Rich Paul can make his headway as an agent. Because in the past, he hasn't done Cleveland favors. He hasn't gotten guys for less. Matter of fact, he's gotten guys more. Like, that's LeBron's whole thing. Problem is that's not the way in which you're going to build a championship team in L.A. You're going to have to get a depth of players because you're not LeBron to play 75 games anymore. And you're not going to be able to cover up for guys' defensive weaknesses. Neither is Anthony Davis as he gets older. Anthony Davis is an unbelievable weapon at both ends of the floor. He is, by my estimation, inarguably one of the top five players in the NBA. Especially now that I don't know where we put Kevin Durant. But he's a two-way player, the likes of which you got Kawhi, you got Giannis, and you got Anthony Davis as the top three two-way players. That's really it. That's the conversation he's in. And so they made a big, bold move, and that's what big franchises do. Whether it's movies, you know, and Infinity Endgame. Think of the actors and actresses that are in that movie. It costs a lot of money. Cost almost $400 million to put on, but it's worth it. And for the Lakers, Lonzo is the guy I thought was really close. Now, who knows if he stays healthy, and who knows how he emotionally handles being out of L.A. Maybe it really helps him, but I thought he was close before he got hurt to being a really good player. Maybe not a great player, but dynamic defensively. And with LeBron, that's important, the ability to cover multiple positions as he gets older. Like, he can make shots and he can make plays. He doesn't need that as much. And obviously, Lonzo has to shoot the ball better, but such an athlete and such a competitor defensively. And a good rebounder. He does things that not a lot of guys do. Brandon Ingram, you can take him. Josh Hart, not a starter. All those picks, they'll hurt you in the future. Lonzo Ball is the one that was the real get. I think his dad is... you know, does more harm than he does good. I wouldn't put him on this pod, let alone a radio show or TV show. But he got those opportunities, and he continues to make himself look like a jerk. instead of just going like, hey, we're going to go kill it in New Orleans. We hope they kill it in L.A. We're always, once a Laker, always a Laker. Instead, you like burn every bridge. It's just not the way business should work. So, I don't know. I look at it and I understand you got a GM that was under pressure to get it done by his best player, by his owner, by his fans. And when you're under that kind of pressure, even though they should have had leverage over New Orleans, you end up making a one-sided deal. It was kind of a one-sided deal. They got the better player, but it was kind of a Herschel Walker trade. Let's just be honest. Thankfully, they didn't give up Kyle Kuzma, who they all love. But now Kyle Kuzma has got to become a better defender. He's just not a good defense player. But he is a shot maker, and he will continue to improve from three-point range. He didn't shoot threes at all in college. So he's learning as a perimeter player as he goes. Now, what's next? I don't know. The Houston thing is interesting. I felt like Houston was going to be blown up. And then all of a sudden, Houston looked around and goes, wait a second, the Warriors are done. We can still win this thing. The problem with dirty laundry being aired is it's really, really hard. Really hard to shake hands and get back to work. Now, I think basketball players handle adversity better than most any other athletes. They may complain about it. They may bitch about it. But you bitch about your job. I bitch about mine. That's just the nature of it. I think basketball players can let bygones be bygones and then go and try and get buckets. But the idea that Chris Paul, like the rest of us, doesn't like watching James Harden dribble the ball to death, not that profound, but also hard to see them winning a title if their chemistry isn't right. Like, look, I get analytics. I think there's some brilliant parts to analytics basketball, which are fascinating and things that I learn every day. Like I shared this stat on radio last week. 84% of Steph Curry's free throws are swished. Think about that. Think about your favorite player and what he shoots from the line. Then think, forget about making him. He makes over 84%, makes 90%. 84% of them are swishes. That's insane. Again, those are just new age statistics. I love them. But what they can't account for is chemistry. Because on an analytics spreadsheet, Chris Paul and James Harden work together. And they're better together than they are separate, even with the Houston Rockets. But games aren't decided on spreadsheets. And their chemistry isn't good. And things like this fester. And I don't know whether or not you can keep the relationship together for 1 year and then hope it doesn't blow up. But chemistry does matter. Championship teams do like each other. They figure out a way to all get along and accept each other's quirks. And one of the things it takes is it takes a best player who can laugh at themselves. And I haven't seen James Harden be that guy. I definitely haven't seen Chris Paul be that guy. And now they want to add Jimmy Butler, who would be his fourth team in 4 years. Like, So let me get this straight. Jimmy Butler, whose teams haven't won, who's constantly trying to drive guys to do it the right way. Maybe it's because he's a vet and they're younger guys. Comes over and he's going to help the chemistry of Chris Paul, who's never won. And he's going to help James Harden, who's never won and doesn't play well in big games at home to decide your season. And he's going to help Mike D'Antoni, who's never won in the NBA. Like, okay, maybe it works. Maybe it works. And then you got Kawhi Leonard, who's the best player in the NBA. Think about it. A guy who grows up Riverside, California, MLK High School. Pac-10 schools don't offer him. He goes to San Diego State. 2 years in, he leaves. And I thought he'd be good. He wasn't a great shooter in college. He wasn't a shooter at all in high school. Made himself into it. Always been a tenacious defender, but now a good enough ball handler and shot maker on the perimeter. He's unbelievable. And if you can lead a team to a championship and play both ends and defend multiple positions, score in the post and score from three and in the mid-range, scored all three levels. He's made himself into a better passer. He won two finals MVPs in two different places. LeBron seems to be older and KD is hurt. Giannis can't shoot. That's the best player in the NBA. A little bit by default, but a lot of it by success. That's an incredible story. Last thing on the NBA draft before we get to Jonathan Givony. I do like Zion Williamson. I'm not sure he's a immediate superstar, but I think the highlight reels would be unbelievable. And he does so many of the little things that you need a power forward / small ball five to do. He's a new age new wave Blake Griffin, Draymond Green, with a force multiplier the likes of which you haven't seen since LeBron. Walks into a room, smiles, and lights up the whole place. And that's important. It is important. All right, let's get you to Jonathan Givony from Draft Express and ESPN. He joins us now.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
This is honestly really cool for me. He works at a place I used to work, but I have always followed his site back when I used to work there and do NBA draft stuff on radio there and some on SportsCenter and on TV there. He's Jonathan Givony. He joins us. Draft Express is his, that's the, I used to go to that website, man. How long ago did you start it?
2003.
God, that's when I started working there. And I always thought to myself, I don't know how people did my job. And this is like national sports radio or doing TV stuff before the internet. What was your background? Like, what led you to being so inside and so into specifically the NBA draft?
Well, it goes back to when I was really young. The Miami Heat came along in 1989. I was 7 years old, and I was obsessed with them. Every day, I would come home from school, and I would devour the Sun Sentinel and the Miami Herald, Ira Winderman, and then I would sit, you know, every night at 7 o'clock and watch them play. And they were absolutely horrible, you know, back in the days of Ronnie Cicely, Steve Smith, Glenn Rice, Matt Geiger, Keith Atkins, who now works for the Heat, and I geek out every time I see him. And I just loved watching them and just kind of thinking, you know, how can these guys get better? You know, I mean, who can they acquire? Well, who are the college players out there, the international players? And so from a very young age, I was always really into that side of things. You know, I'm short, unathletic Jewish guy, and, you know, I played a little bit in high school, but I was terrible. I never got off the bench, and so I knew very early on that if I wanted to work in basketball, it'd have to be, you know, in this field. And so as a freshman in college, started a website, had absolutely no clue what I was doing. Some say I still don't, but pretty early on, I realized that there's a niche there. People started reaching out to me as if, you know, my opinion mattered. Parents, NBA teams, agents, media started getting excited in newspapers, which I thought was insane. And so that kind of forced me to become very serious about this. And so I started traveling, going to different camps, sleeping on people's couches, begging people to let me, you know, crash on their hotel room floors. I would go to Europe and, you know, I stay at hostels, and I treated it like a job. And I was lucky enough to have some really amazing people that mentored me, guys like David Thorpe, the late Rob Muirs. He was a scout for the New Jersey Nets, and I spent hours on the phone with him picking his brain about international scouting. And so, you know, every event I would go to, I would sit next to a scout. I try to find the most experienced one I could and just, you know, pound them all game long with questions. And these people were always very, you know, willing to talk to me. And so that really helped me just kind of figure this out. And, you know, as I was starting going to summer leagues, you meet people and you figure out revenue streams because you can't make a living with a mock draft. But I was young and it didn't matter. I mean, some people were going out. I was at the University of Florida. People were doing keg stands. I was making mock drafts, you know, at 2 a.m. on Friday nights. I was, you know, a draft dork, and so I didn't really need money. So I was lucky enough to be kind of at the right place, the right time, before social media, before the blogs. And I would, you know, go in spam message boards trying to get our name out and try and cheat, you know, the search engine optimization and try and, get Google to rank us higher. And so that's, you know, just kind of how it came together. And I was really lucky to kind of be there at the right time. I don't know if I started a website today, if I would have been able to kind of, you know, build up that platform. It's hard. You get lost in Twitter and Instagram, and it's not as easy now as it was back then.
Yeah, it's fascinating because there's so many opportunities. And I remember, I'm not going to there's a couple other sites that had done that had had similar mock drafts and that people cite. And I always thought to myself, and at the time Chad Ford was doing it for us, I always thought to myself, like, I felt like your stuff had an amount of substance to it, whereas it wasn't just listing names. You know, there was a logic to it. And though I didn't always agree with every ranking, it was like, all right, well, okay, that makes me. And then you'd look very early on. You're like, well, there's somebody that I would use it to as a reference point to go back and call somebody about or ask. Okay, so here's the question I've always wondered, and I don't know if you've shared this. When you first started putting together your mock drafts, was it your opinion, or would you take kind of the, you know, all the people you trusted's opinion and then say, like, look, I've talked to 5-6 people and this is what I'm coming up with?
Well, even today, I mean, I'm spending all day on the phone. You know, I'm trying to hit every single NBA team at some point today and get into their war room. And I don't ask them necessarily, who are you guys going to draft? I ask them, what's going to happen in front of you?
Right.
Which players are going to be gone? You know, which, and that helps me where I don't want people to risk their job and tell me what, you know, their team is going to do. I mean, that's foolish, but it does help me figure out, you know, what the draft is going to look like roughly. And so, I mean, early on in the season, in November and October, like right now, I'm actually working on a 2020 mock draft, and I'm writing a long article talking about previewing the draft. It's going to run, you know, Friday morning on ESPN. At this stage, there's not a lot of intel on who teams like. I mean, most half the teams, I would say, haven't even watched most of these guys, you know. And so, I mean, outside of like the James Wisemans and the top picks. And so, the early on in the year, I think you're trying to forecast. You're trying to use your experience and say, well, you know, this is what a lottery pick looks like in my experience. You know, you do this for 16 years and you start to see trends. I mean, you've seen a player before in a different iteration, and that helps you. But you know, the closer you get to the draft, I think there are players who I have in the lottery right now who I wouldn't take them in the lottery myself, but they're going to get picked pretty high. And my job is to forecast the draft. And people sometimes knock us. For example, they say, well, you didn't have Fred VanVleet, you know, projected to get drafted. Well, yeah, he didn't get drafted, you know, and actually I did, and I was wrong. And so that's, you know, it's kind of a fine line. I'm glad you asked that question about, you know, is this how we think it's going to end up, or actually, you know, how we think it should end up?
Yes, that's maybe an even better question, right? Because I used to do that for ESPN, and I've done it for The Athletic as well, which is you basically like, look, I talk to people who think I'm crazy. And they're like, I would never do that. That's okay. My opinion, I've been wrong. I've been right too in that how I would. Who's the guy who? And it doesn't have to be. You got 16 years of. I don't have to call on every piece of your memory that you had high that you thought should be drafted high, didn't, and has ended up becoming a very, very good pro.
Well, Giannis, I think, is a good one. You know, I mean, we were the first ones to ever go out and scout him. And, you know, from the first day I laid eyes on him, I said, you know, this guy looks like a first-round pick to me. And NBA teams were telling me, he's great. You're crazy. He's unathletic. He doesn't produce, even, you know, in the second division of Greece. And, you know, slowly as we started watching more, I said, what, this guy should be a top-10 pick.
So you saw him on film? Was it film? Or was it like, would you watch him on Synergy?
I went to Greece. I got on a plane, and I went to watch him practice, first interview he ever did.
This is the best stuff. This is the best stuff. Wait, so you're in Florida at the time, and who told you about this kid, Giannis Antetokounmpo?
His agent, Yorgos Dimitropoulos, actually reached out to me the summer before he was drafted and said, hey, there's a kid here I want you to take a look at. He's a 6'5 Nigerian kid. He has no passport. I'm trying to find a federation in Europe that might be able to get him a passport. Do you know anybody? And so I watch him. I'm like, well, this guy is pretty interesting. He needs to be on my radar. And I mean, the tape was so grainy. He was playing at such a low level. I kind of filed it away. And then the season started, and I started hearing rumors of, you know, scouts going out there to watch him. And I got on a plane myself, spent time with him. I met his family. I watched the game. I was sitting right next to a scout from the LA Lakers, Antonio Macias, who I really respect. And I said, Antonio, this is, you do this for a living. What do you think? He's like, this guy is unbelievable. So, you know, sometimes you kind of have to bounce ideas off other people, but, that was a great story. And that just kind of showed me that you can find talent anywhere, you know, and you just can't ever stop working and traveling. You just can't wait for other people to bring guys to you. You have to get on a plane and go find them yourself.
Who's your biggest miss that you thought would be good that didn't? And I also say, like, look, yeah, everybody gives me the grief over, you know, Johnny Flynn versus Steph Curry. And, like, you know, if you could explain to people that, one, Johnny Flynn was in a triangle's a terrible system for him. And his hip was bad. And also, I was wrong, right? Like, Steph got better. And Steph's been amazing. But, like, if you got to take injury out, right? Because I don't know what Greg Oden would be in this NBA, but it's hard to know because his body just let him down from the second he became a pro. Who would be your guy that you're like, man, I just missed on that one?
I think Ben Simmons is a guy that we were very vocal in questioning, you know, things about him, his shooting, you know, is he a winner, things like that. And I think he's, you know, he was an all-star this year. And, I mean, he really struggled in the playoffs. But I think he showed that, you know, he's an absolute star. And, you know, I mean, I wonder in a different situation how he'd look. But I'm pretty clear that we were wrong on Ben Simmons.
Okay, let's get to this year's NBA draft. Obviously, if I was, and I didn't look at, I don't remember, I'm sure your mock was like anybody's mock. Last year we had RJ, right? RJ was the guy. And you're not crazy. You weren't wrong. Like, coming into the year, RJ was the guy. And RJ's still probably going to go, I mean, he's going to go third, but people are far less in love with RJ Barrett. And I understand that the NBA game is different. Much higher volume of possessions, much more spread out. His game is better suited for the NBA, especially offensively. And they're all going to, you know, if they're a worker and if their jumper's not broken, they're going to get better shooting the basketball. But why have people kind of, do you believe they soured on RJ, or it's just Zion and Ja have boat raced him because of some of the jaw dropping stuff that they do?
I think it's a combination of the two. I mean, people aren't quite as enthusiastic about RJ today as they were, you know, maybe when the season started. But, I mean, Zion showed us already in that Canada trip over the summer that he's the number one pick in the draft. And, you know, from the very first game that he played against Kentucky, it was just like, this guy is incredible. I mean, he has a chance to be, you know, a top 10 player in the NBA. He's just special. And so he, you know, vaulted to number one immediately. And then I think Morant, you know, just the season he had, just as exciting of a prospect as he is with his passing ability. And so I still am a big fan of RJ Barrett, you know, but he was surpassed by those two. But that doesn't mean that, you know, it's only one day, you know, the NBA draft. And so he still has a chance to have a great NBA career. I'd be very excited to draft him if I were the Knicks.
Okay, Darius Garland, I heard, little birdie told me that he worked out for the Lakers. He's worked out for a couple people. Worked out for the Lakers, and they were blown away. They said it was the best shooting workout they've ever had. I guess 2 years ago when they had Donovan Mitchell in, and, you know, they drafted Lonzo, but all the coaches, all that the former staff's coaches thought they should have either drafted De'Aaron Fox or Donovan Mitchell. So, you know, some of that's Monday morning quarterbacking, but that's actually what they told me at the time. And they said that Garland's workout was second maybe only to Donovan Mitchell. But he's, you know, he got hurt and people haven't seen him, so there's not the name recognition. What's your opinion of Darius Garland?
Well, I actually went back and looked at our very first 2019 mock draft, and he was the number one point guard on our board. He was ranked eighth at the time. So it's not, you know, people are saying, well, you know, it helps him that he got hurt and he wouldn't have gone this high. But, I mean, there's a case to be made that had he played out the season, we would be talking about him the same way we're talking about John Morant. I mean, he was ranked ahead of John Morant at that time. And so it doesn't shock me when I hear about all these amazing workouts that Garland is having, because we thought he was that kind of talent going into the year. And so it's just unfortunate that we weren't able to see it. So I heard the same thing as you, that, you know, he was phenomenal with the Lakers, and same thing with the Cavs and with the Bulls. And this morning worked out for the Knicks. I haven't heard yet how that went, but, you know, he's a legitimate guy. So,
would there be any chance that the Knicks would sit there and go like, look, because here's the thing with RJ Barrett, as it's always been told to me, and I kind of tend to buy it some, which is, if RJ Barrett's your guy, you give him the basketball in a James Harden sort of way, like, he's going to be productive. He competes. You know, he likes to, he plays off a ball screen. He plays downhill, but he's not a great shooter. He's a little stiff in terms of his movements. His jump shot's a little stiff. It's not necessarily fluid. Like, he doesn't have, there's no, he can't, he kind of has to, feels like he has to play in a system where he has a high volume of possessions. Like, you can't, it's like James Harden now, where you can't play him off the basketball. He's just not himself. Whereas Darius Garland can really shoot the basketball, and he may become a star point guard. But even if not, because he can, because he has gravity, because he can really shoot, he doesn't have to be the best player right away. It's the same thing with Zion, right? Like, Zion, the things he was able to do at Duke should be able to translate more quickly in the NBA, because the offense wasn't necessarily designed around him. He fit in with RJ and, to a lesser extent, with Cam Reddish. So I guess the question becomes, if you're the Knicks, do you believe that they should have a long and hard thought about Garland ahead of RJ, or do you believe RJ is that much better?
I think RJ is that much better. And to me, the fact that he needs the ball to be successful, that's attractive. I mean, that's what he is. I mean, he's the guy who's a shot creator. I mean, he's going to be, and I think Zion is the same way, and I think Garland is the same way. You know, you're not exactly looking for role players when you're drafting in the top five. And so the fact that RJ, you know, can play that James Harden style, I think that's why he's going to be a high draft pick. And, you know, I think his shooting is going to improve. You know, I mean, you don't make 2 threes a game like he did if you can't shoot. Obviously the percentages need to improve, but he'll never be surrounded by as many non-shooters as he was this year at Duke. And so I just think that, you know, and he just turned 19 years old 5 days ago. So there's a level of improvement that you project there too. And just with the work ethic and a lot of people say, oh, you can't win with RJ Barrett. He doesn't play winning basketball. I mean, all this guy has done his whole life is win. He was, you know, 2-time national championship in high school. He played up 2.5 years at the under 19 world championship and beat the U.S., scored 39 points. And they had a pretty good year at Duke too. And so, you know, he's done a lot of winning for a guy who's supposed to doesn't play winning basketball.
No, that was the whole MO on him was he was a winner, right? And yeah. Now all of a sudden they don't win 1 year at Duke and you're not a winner. Like, okay, sure. All right, then there's the question in terms of point guard. You have Darius Garland, you know, and then, you know, all of a sudden you get kind of beyond him, and there's some others that I would say are like in consideration. Everybody talks about that 4 spot. Coby White is a name I've heard has been phenomenal in workouts. He's the all-time leading scorer in the state of North Carolina. He doesn't measure out as long, and I can't figure out if that's because his hair makes him seem taller, so it makes his arms seem shorter, or maybe he's just not that long. How big do you believe the gap is between Darius Garland and Coby White?
I think it's significant. I'm not necessarily sure that Coby White is a starting point guard in the NBA, and I think he's already benefited from how weak this class is outside the top four. You know, I think that everybody's looking for guards and they're looking for shooting, and so you just run out of names really fast. And so Coby White has, you know, kind of elevated himself into that conversation by, you know, being in a phenomenal situation in North Carolina where they play at a, you know, really fast pace, and he has the ball in his hands all the time, and he can shoot whatever he wants. And he, unlike RJ, he was surrounded by shooters, and not just shooters, but seniors, old players who can knock down shots, and it's going to make you look good. And so, to me, Coby White is, you know, he's a Patty Mills, Jordan Clarkson type. I wouldn't take him, you know, in the top seven, personally.
Hmm. There's a couple of guys that you have that people are fans of, and that then there's like a polarizing side to him. I think Cam Reddish is probably the guy that you get that the most, right? Walks into a gym, you're like, what NBA team does he play for? Shoots the basketball, like you see the release, you're like, wow. But there's something missing for most people. Some people say it's personality. You'll get the, I don't know if he loves basketball thing. You'll get the, well, you know, he didn't make enough shots at Duke. What's your assessment, both having evaluated him and talked to people around the NBA about Cam Reddish?
I think he's going to be a better pro than he was a college player, but I'd be petrified to draft him too high. I would like to have him in a situation where he can be your third or fourth best player. You know, maybe somewhere like the Hawks, for example. Yep. I think that's intriguing, where he's not forced to be the guy, because it's not his personality to be the guy. And, you know, and I think he's going to start off well in the NBA, and I think he's going to get paid. And I wonder a little bit what happens after that. Those are my question marks, more so than, you know, about his talent. But, you know, you're right. I mean, the productivity wasn't there. You know, the list of players who shot under 40% for two and got drafted in the first round, I mean, it's one, you know, in the history of the NBA draft. And it's Malachi Richardson, you know, and he's out of the NBA now. So that's a huge red flag. You know, like, you have to give the benefit of the doubt to RJ a little bit with the lack of shooting. I think you have to do the same thing with Cam. And, you know, he's only 19 years old, so, and I mean, the tools are incredible, you know, with the size and the length and the frame and the stroke, like you just said. So, I don't know, that's a tough one for me. And there are certain guys that you look at and you say, you know, I'm really happy to be in the forecasting business and not in the actually making picks business. And, you know, Reddish is one of those guys. Bol Bol is another.
Yeah,
there's a couple of guys like that in the draft where you just, you know, it could go so many different ways. It's very hard to project.
Okay, so I saw Bol Bol play in high school when he was at Modern Day before he transferred to Finley. I've had people watch him work out. And, I mean, he's 208 pounds at 7'2 or 7'3 is scary. He also, he doesn't bend his knees when he plays. And, yes, he can shoot, but, like, I don't know. I feel like that's kind of sometimes all he does. Like, that would be a hard one for me. Granted, he's not going to go top 10 in the draft, probably, you know, somewhere mid to high teens to low 20s. What's your eval on Bol Bol?
He would scare me. You know, I mean, the further away you get from the lottery, I think the more his upside becomes enticing. You know, I mean, 7'9" standing reach. And the footwork and the hands and the touch and just the fluidity, the mobility, the ability to take a rebound off the defensive glass and push it up. And, you know, unlike, you know, like a Kevin Porter or a Reddish, who are, you know, those guys are, you can say they were teases in college.
Right.
Bol Bol actually produced, you know, he put up 21 points, 10 rebounds, 3 blocks, and did it efficiently. It wasn't against the strongest level of competition, but at Madison Square Garden, that game against Syracuse, holy cow, you know, like, you could look at him and say, what's the difference between, you know, what Kristaps Porzingis was at age 19? I mean, I watched Kristaps Porzingis when he was 19. He was a beanpole. He was soft. All he wanted to do was shoot threes. And then, you know, as he got into his 20s, his body started to evolve. He started to get more confident. And, you know, just those scoring instincts, the shot blocking instincts. And so if you believe in your player development staff, and you believe in Bol Bol's personality, which is, that's a whole nother thing right there in terms of the work ethic and all that. That's why I think where a lot of people are scared, as well as the injury, you know, then maybe you take a flyer on him in that, you know, that 15 to 20 range, or, you know, somewhere around then. And you say, you know, if it's a weak draft, and so maybe if everything goes right, you know, maybe I have a star here, but I mean, it's a dicey one. It's just the thing is, there's just not a whole lot else. And so that, I think that's what's leading a lot of GMs outside the lottery to say, let me just take a flyer on Bol Bol because, you know, I don't like any of these other guys, honestly.
What about Sekou? What about, I mean, I have, he played, Kyle Milling got fired earlier this year, but he played for a buddy of mine, Kyle Milling in France for a bit of time. He's one of those, the measurables are good. He's not as long as I thought he would be, but, pretty athletic. Like, what is he project to be?
I mean, he's the prototype of what a lot of teams are looking for at that 3-4 position. I mean, you know, 230 pounds. He's 6'9". He has almost a 9-foot standing reach, which is, that's about average for an NBA center. And so you look at the frame, and, you know, we've got a really comprehensive measurement database where you plug that in, you say, okay, show me the NBA players that he's most similar to. We have almost 3,000 players in there over the last 30 years. And all of his comps are power forwards and centers. And then you look at the fact that he's got a pretty nice shooting stroke. You know, he can handle the ball a little bit. And he's so young. I mean, he doesn't turn 19 until December. And there's not many guys in this year's draft class, I think, that you can put him in a league like France, which is a highly competitive league, and they can score 34 points in a game, you know, for a playoff team. So I like Sekou. I mean, the questions with him are more about the motor, you know, the intensity level. He tends to float out there sometimes, doesn't always make the impact defensive that you might hope. And so there's a little bit of, you know, theoretical prospect there, but, you know, we're talking about Kobe White as a top 6 or 7 guy, and then, you know, people are down on, you know, DeAndre Hunter, Jarrett Culver, a lot of these guys, and so there is some real appeal in a guy like Sekou, you know, with his upside.
I'm intrigued by it. Okay, just a couple more. What about what is it? How you pronounce it? Goga.
Yes,
Goga. How do you say his last name?
Bataze.
Okay, Goga Bataze. Did you go to the Republic of Georgia and watch him play?
He played in Montenegro. I did. I did travel to Podgorica to watch his team Buducna play, and I stayed 2 nights. I watched him practice too.
Hold on. Wait. Listen. Everybody else wants your information, which is great, and I want that. Okay. So you go to Montenegro. How do you fly there? You fly from New York straight away, or you stop somewhere?
No, I was on like a 2-week trip through Europe, and I think I came from Germany. I was in Germany the night before, and there's a nonstop. Actually, I connected through Paris to Podgorica.
Okay, so what's Podgorica, Montenegro like?
It's kind of gray. It's not like the prettiest place, especially when I was there in January. Apparently outside, you know, like they have some of the best beaches in Europe. And so the summer in Montenegro is supposed to be unbelievable. There are tons of like Russian oligarchs who own like a lot of land. And, I think that like Popovich, he has like a house out there. Apparently he spends his summers and it's the food is really good. Really nice people. I mean, it borders Serbia, and so, you know, tons of players came out of there, and if I had to rank the worst places I've been to, it wouldn't even be in my top 100. I mean, it's a nice place and a beautiful hotel, and so I actually enjoyed my stay in there.
Okay, so he's got what, 7'2" wingspan. He's about to turn 20 years old. When I hear his name called, what should I think?
Kind of like a Brook Lopez type, you know. I mean, slow-footed, but good instincts as a shot blocker. Pretty quick off his feet, can step outside, can make a three-pointer. You know, just a very solid all-around player. Skilled, good feet, good hands, good touch. I think, you know, 15, 20 years ago, he would have been a top 5 pick because the NBA is kind of going away from these type of guys who, you know, are drop defenders. They, you know, they can't switch. They struggle to hedge. He doesn't, you know, change ends very well. It's going to hurt him a little bit on draft night. He's got some buzz like in 15 or in Detroit, and then he probably doesn't get very far into the 20s if he even gets that far. So, I mean, he was productive. I mean, he played in the EuroLeague. He averaged 12-6 in 24 minutes. He was the rising star. He was the player, the rookie of the year, essentially, of that competition. He's good. I mean, he's going to be a solid player. But, you know, it's not exactly the the type of big man that a lot of NBA teams are looking for these days.
Adam Makoka. He's French, right? Super yeah. athletic, 3-and-D. Is he an NBA player? I know he'll be drafted in the second round, but is Adam Makoka, does he translate to the NBA?
Defensively, yes. He's a big, strong guard. They play him at point guard. He's 6'5", 6'10 wingspan, great athlete, absolutely lockdown defender, doesn't have really any offensive game at all, struggles to make shots, struggles to make free throws, and so he's a development player. I think somebody takes him in the 50s. They stash him for a couple of years. He's in a good development spot. He's played on the same team, actually, as Goga at Mega B-Max. And so, you know, he's 20 years old, and, you know, if he can develop some kind of jump shot, maybe he can be a backup one day, and I think, you know, that's, you'd be really happy with that in the 50s.
Did you, I take it when you were on your two-week go to Europe, did you go see Olympia play and see Luka Šimunić play?
Yeah, I saw, actually, Olympia Ljubljana play at home against Adam Makoka's team. So I got, you know, two birds with one stone, and that was good.
What did you think of him?
I've been watching him for a long time since he was 15 years old. He's been on the radar. He's always been considered the number one prospect in his age group in Europe, and we've gotten to know him really well. He actually was kind of messing around, was hoping to go playing college, and so the first time I went to go see him when he was 15, his trainer was wearing a Duke shirt, you know, because they wanted me to take video and to send it to Duke, and so they would offer him a scholarship. That never happened, but he's come a long way. I'm proud of him because he was considered a very soft kid early on in his career, especially from a, you know, from a toughness standpoint, mentality, and you know, he went to Barcelona, didn't really work out for him, and he went in Slovenia this year, had a tough year, but he's talented, man. He's 6'11", he can switch, he can make threes, he can handle the ball. Theoretically, he does a lot of different things. It doesn't always come together for him, but he's still so young. I mean, he's 19 years old, and so he's got time to figure it out. I can see someone taking him in the 25 to 35 range. You know, putting him on their G League team and just hoping it works out, because that's the kind of big man that a lot of teams are looking for.
Yeah, super, super skilled. Okay, I have a question about a domestic player that I'm really torn on. I mean, I love what he became, but I just don't see how it works in the NBA. But everybody says Ty Jerome is Gervais Vasquez. I mean, I don't know. I mean, he just jumping up and trying to shoot over, like, real NBA players feels like a reach, and I'm seeing him on people's boards in the first, you know, late first round. I'm not saying he's not tough. You know, he makes shots. He doesn't have to handle the ball, but he can. He can really pass. Is Ty Jerome a first round draft pick?
I think he's going to go in the first round. You know, you have to temper your expectations a bit when you're talking about guys in the 20s. I mean, history tells you that 15 of the 30 players drafted in the first round aren't NBA players at all, you know, after 5 years. And so if you're getting a guy who can make shots and has a feel and is competitive and is a good kid, I think you take that. You know, I mean, the pedigree is there, and there just isn't much shooting in this draft. And so I think people are, and that's why they're looking at Cam Johnson. That's why Tyler Hero is going to be a lottery pick. You know, because there's just really not a lot of it out there. And so that's why I think a guy like Jerome is interesting, because in teams in the 20s, they want someone that they can play 10 minutes a game. And there's not many guys like that in this year's class.
Is Jordan, do you think, I think Jordan Caroline makes the NBA. I know he probably goes undrafted. But, you know, everybody's searching for that small ball five. I think he can shoot a little bit better than he shot it in college. He's obviously a crazy athlete. He's small. Am I crazy to think Jordan Caroline's an NBA player?
I mean, I don't have it myself. It wouldn't shock me. You know, I just, I think he probably is in the wrong sport. You
yes.
know, like
no,
I he should be in the NFL.
I have two friends that are GMs, and I was like, if he doesn't get picked, you should offer him a contract immediately. Like, obviously his dad, his grandpa were great NFL players. Like, but yeah, he wants to play basketball.
The problem is that, Doug, he measured 6'4".
I know.
You know. So he's essentially a center who's 6'4", barefoot. You know, it's not like he's crazy long, and there's not a lot of skill there. There's not a lot of feel there. So yeah, he'll knock people around. He might injure somebody, you know, but is that You know, I mean,
is, so Tyler Hansbrough, that's what Tyler Hansbrough did. That's what Tyler Hansbrough did.
But Tyler Hansbrough led college basketball in scoring, too. I mean, he was the best player in the NCAA. And so Jordan Caroline, I mean, they were just an okay team, you know. And so I could see it on a two-way. I mean, why not? But, you know, I just don't see a lot of upside there.
All right,
personally.
Last thing, and I did kind of bury the lead. Zion Williamson, if you, like, again, we're not going to hold you to this. We're not going to do old takes exposed, freezing cold takes exposed or whatever. But best guess on what Zion Williamson, what happens with him? Does he have to lose weight? What does he look like? What has he play? Et cetera, et cetera. Give me your forecast for Zion Williamson.
I think he's going to be a top 10 player in the NBA. I'm all in on Zion Williamson. I hope that New Orleans, you know, gets some more shooting. I mean, that's the thing that is going to be important for him, just because I honestly see him as a ball handler, as a playmaker, as a facilitator, a guy who, you know, kind of plays the way that Giannis does in Milwaukee, you know, where you just surround him with shooting. Cause I think he's a good passer. I mean, he's very skilled with the ball, and you just can't stay in front of him. I just don't know who is a player in the NBA that can guard this dude.
I don't know. I think he's amazing. I think there's a bunch of different, like, you put together, you remember Kelly LeBrock in Weird Science, right, where they cut up different pieces of different women from different magazines? Like, that's what he is. Like, there's a, in terms of vertical leap, there's a Blake Griffin to him. In terms of defensive versatility, and I think you'll have to lose weight in the pros, there's a Draymond Green to him, right? But he can actually, unlike Draymond, he can actually score in the low post. Like, he's got a nice little low post game. And then, you know, there's a little LeBron to him, maybe a Giannis to him, in that he's not the passer of LeBron, but he does like to pass, and he is a pretty good passer. He's a good ball handler who's going to get better. Like, it's a hard comp because there isn't one, but that doesn't mean I don't think I love how they'll be defensively, potentially, in New Orleans. Like, they got guys that'll get after people. And my two things are, you know, can he lose the weight and keep it off? Can he lose? Because I think he's going to have to lose the weight to stay healthy. Even though I know he's built, but I mean, like, you've seen him in person. Like, he's built, he looks like a football player playing basketball in terms of his body. And then
he's shredded.
Yeah. And then, yeah, but he's so thick. Like, that's not how basketball players usually look, right? Like,
right. That's not how basketball players usually play. There's a lot of things about him that aren't like anybody else. And, you know, I'm with you on all that. The one thing I think we need to mention is, people love playing with him. I mean, he's an unbelievable teammate. He's incredibly humble. He deflects everything back towards the team.
Yes.
And that's just such a special quality to have in your best player. And other guys are going to want to play with him in turn. So he's going to bring guys with him to New Orleans. Not today, not tomorrow, but in 3-4 years from now, they're going to have a squad, because people are going to want to be with that guy. He does everything, honestly, and he really is the whole package. And so it was so much fun covering this guy for a year, and it's going to be so much fun watching him in New Orleans
Honestly, that's a great point you bring up, and I know you got to run, but this is kind of a really important thing that people should realize, is that, like, look, in the NBA, you're around these guys nonstop, really. I mean, yeah, there's about a month in the summer where you're not, but for the most part, it's a 10, 11 month around people. And I had this interesting conversation with somebody about, I'll just say, Moses Brown. And he's like, yeah, I went to see Moses Brown. And, you know, picking apart his game. And it's interesting, kind of something you said, you know, 15 years ago, Moses Brown is probably a top 10, top 15 pick, right? Because he's a center, he's big. And he said, you know, it's just not great energy there. And what was the big guy from UNLV? Was it last year or the year before? Why am I forgetting? And anyway, we sat there, and it was interesting. I was like, yeah.
Brandon McCoy?
Yes. I said, you know, he's kind of Brandon McCoy, where, you know, he's from a foregone era, player from a foregone era. But more than anything, like, if you go and watch Brandon McCoy play, it's just guys don't love playing with him. Guys aren't energized. Like, he gets a dunk and he screams, but nobody else screams with him, you know? And there is something to being being a, you know, especially when you're young coming in the NBA, like, dude, you should be having fun and people should want to play with you. And Zion has that it factor, which is unique because they don't all have it. Some of them are wired a little differently now to where they, you know, it's so much about their brand and about Syria and their social media. Like, that dude just goes out and has fun and everybody has fun with him. And that might be the most special characteristic of why he could be a superstar.
Yeah, 100%, and I think Morant has some of that too. And so, you know, that's why this has been a fun draft to cover, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how these guys turn out in the NBA. But you're right. I mean, the off the court stuff it matters a ton, and that's why, you know, going out and meeting these kids when they're 15 and getting to, you know, and watching them and their families and all that, interviewing them. That's why we do that. You know, so we can get to today, and there's a comfort level there, and you can. You know, the intel and all that, it's so important.
All right. Last thing. Your favorite kid in this draft, you talk about meeting their families. Give me one that you're like, man, I'm a little biased because I love this kid or I love his family.
There's a lot of them, honestly. There's a bunch of guys that I can point to. You know, Jackson Hayes, just the story is so interesting. You know, I can't wait to see how that one turns out. Tyler Hero, I put him kind of in that same boat. Cam Johnson, really cool guy to spend time with. Eric Paschal, you know, just an awesome college player, an awesome dude, and going to have a good NBA career, I'm pretty sure of it. You know, there's a couple of the guys, Grant Williams, the guy that I think we need to talk about too. I mean, like, that dude could run for office, you know, like if he doesn't make the NBA. So, most of these guys are really good kids, you know? Yeah. So that's, I do think the cream rides to the top in a lot of these instances.
No question. Paschal, I think if he had a longer neck, he would be the right side. He had like crazy long arms. I think he'd be a good pro. I'm intrigued by the Jackson Hayes thing, and Tyler Hero, man, he's got that. His sneakers squeak a little differently. I can't wait to see what he's able to do in the NBA. I know you're super busy. Your content is amazing. I've always followed it. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you joining me on this pod. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Doug.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
All right, that's it for the All Ball podcast. Hope you enjoy the NBA draft. I am surprised the Toronto Raptors are the NBA champions, sort of. Although, all season long, we talked about it. Look, they were close. Then LeBron James, who they could never get past, left. And they added a better player than DeMar DeRozan and Kawhi Leonard. Why can't they be there? I'll leave you with this one last thing. It looks bad for the Boston Celtics right now, doesn't it? Kyrie Irving's gone. It looks like Al Horford's gone. Here's what I know. Kyrie was just a jerk, man. He's just one of those guys that's kind of smart but thinks he's brilliant. And he wanted to treat the younger guys like they were less than human. They weren't at his level intellectually, and he'd constantly challenge them just to, you know, just to point things out that they're not aware of. And there's a way to do it. There's a way to lead, and he really struggled with it. And as for Al Horford leaving, I think Al Horford, at the end of the day, is a businessman. And he sits there and goes, look, I could stay in Boston, or I could go get a max contract in Dallas or something. So I'm going to go do that unless Boston wants to pay me the max. And Danny Ainge, who, look, man, if you don't think Danny Ainge built a juggernaut, then you should kind of look at their results as opposed to just about anybody else in the East. Even with LeBron James there, they were constantly, with the exception of the one year they tanked, constantly competitive. And they looked at and they're like, look, Al Horford's a good player. He's a great guy, great character. We'd love to re-sign him for 3 years, not for max money. You know, max money, four-year deal for Al Horford takes you to when he's 37 years old. You think Al Horford at 37 years old is going to be worth, you know, $30 million a year? No. Somebody's going to pay it. It's not going to be the Boston Celtics. So you may think that's a sign of a bad GM. Look, they didn't get LeBron. They didn't. When they had a chance to get Kevin Garnett, they got a championship out of it. They did the best they could with it. And when they left, They reinvigorated themselves with all those draft picks. And when they had a chance to go get Kyrie Irving, they did so. How could you have possibly seen Gordon Hayward breaking his leg and Kyrie Irving having to have a couple of different knee operations and the team playing well in spite of those injuries, which caused strife when both those guys came back? Could you have seen that happening? The answer is probably not. I don't think Jason Tatum's as good as his reputation, and I think he was feeling himself a little bit this year because so many people, you know, blew him up over how well he played in the playoffs. I don't think Terry Rozier is a starting point guard on a lead NBA team. And I think everybody kind of knows that. That's why there's not openly opining for Terry Rozier. He might. Maybe the Lakers steal him, you know, and overpay him. But I think those guys played above their level. People forget some of the things that went bump in the night in order for them to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, right? Like they didn't match up with the Raptors, and they didn't, you know, they didn't have to match up with the Raptors, who are the best team. And they always matched up well with the Philadelphia 76ers, who were probably too young at that point to beat them. And as bad as this season was, they still won a playoff series. And Kyrie's still leaving. Kyrie doesn't leave, and that's his own choice. We're having a completely different conversation. So I don't hold Danny Ainge somehow responsible, like he's done a bad job. He's done a great job. And now they'll have more draft picks and more cap space and a chance to go out and find. And we'll see if Gordon Hayward can ever return to form. And to people who criticize the Celtics for playing Gordon Hayward so much, look, dude, if you paid that much for a free agent and you were trying to get him ready for the playoffs, you have to play him a ton in the regular season in order to get him ready for the playoffs. The NBA is fascinating. So next week we'll recap the NBA draft. Next week we'll be right into free agency, getting you ready to see what happens with KD, what happens with Kyrie, what happens with Kawhi, what happens with Kemba. Everybody with the name K will be discussed. And then we'll get you ready for our summer long interview series. Last year was awesome. If you missed Jay Billis, download that one. In the meantime, my daily radio show is 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific, on the iHeartRadio app and Fox Sports Radio, foxsportsradio.com, as well as Sirius XM. I think it's 203 and 217. Don't hold me to that. In the meantime, thanks for downloading. Don't forget to subscribe and rate. I think I might make a little bit more money when you do that. Maybe not. But just do it for me. I appreciate it. Make sure you tweet me your questions at Gottlieb Show. We'll answer them next week. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.